It is time now for Arthur Schwartz, and of course, Arthur is the food maven. Arthur joins us every Monday at this time, and of course, we rebroadcast during the noon hour during the weekend, also a rebroadcast for folks that are listening on the weekend. And we say good morning and happy Hanukkah, Arthur.
And happy Hanukkah to you, too. They may not know you're Jewish.
Well, I am. I'm a terrible.
I mean, you're uber Jewish. Your father was a comic in the Catskills.
I'm Jewish. That's right. But I'm a bad Jew.
Well, don't say that. You're just not that observant.
That's it. I'm a very.
That's all.
But I love.
No. Yeah, whatever. Yes. I'm in the same category as you. I'm a secular Jew. Okay.
Yeah.
Culturally, I'm Jewish. I have many deep Jewish beliefs that guide my daily life, but I don't go to synagogue very often.
Well, I even chickened out.
I eat all the food.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's what I do. I was lucky with my grandmother and her family, Hungarian funerals and Jewish funerals. The food has always
right, right. Well, we're not the only culture that provides food at funerals. There's a whole book about this. But Hanukkah is an incredibly festive holiday, the way Christmas is a festive holiday. They don't have a whole lot in common religious-wise. However, they do have commonality in the humankind's way, in that at this time of the year, in our darkest days, literally, we all need light and hope. So many cultures have holidays at this time of the year that involve light. I'm not going to tell the Hanukkah story, but I am going to tell the Arthur Schwartz Hanukkah story, which is that this was my grandmother's, on my mother's side, my maternal grandmother's, big entertaining holiday. It's not a religious day. It's just fun. And the kids got gifts. We did not get 8 gifts. In some families in those days, kids got 8 gifts, maybe little gifts. I bet you there are still some families that do that. We did get Hanukkah gelt. And that was, my grandfather gave us, meaning me and my sister, we lived in the same house with my grandparents, he gave us a silver dollar every Hanukkah. And I kept these well into my college years until I don't remember what happened, but I needed the money. And I foolishly cashed in all my silver dollars for some momentary pleasure, I'm sure. Anyway, my grandmother's big dish on Hanukkah was something she called muchana. We knew nobody else who made muchana, who used this word muchana. My grandmother, you know, used to, who was, you know, like to make up stories, let's say that. She joked, like, that you had to grow up on the right side of Minsk, on the wrong side of the street, something like that. But in fact, our family was, everybody in those days said they were, you know, all the Russian Jews and Polish Jews were either from Minsk or Pinsk. And Poland-Russia border was very flexible then. We were all of the same culture, and we all came from these little shtetls, little villages, little Jewish villages. And I just this year found out that where mine is, and it exists still. Through Ancestry.com, I found a cousin in California who said, she's my age. She said, I had an older half-sister who knew everything about where we came from, and she always said we came from a town called Dog Shit. So I looked this up and found there is, in fact, a shtetl, Dokshitske, D-O-K, and the rest of it you can figure out. Dokshitske, as she said, and there's even a Facebook group. I go on Facebook. There is indeed Jews from Dokshitske group, 564 members, now with me, 65. And there's a leader of the group. This is all beside the point in a way, but this is muchana, my grandmother's Hanukkah dish, turns out to be pretty much the national dish of Belarus. And Dokshitsky is in Belarus. Minsk is the capital these days of Belarus. I don't think many Jews lived in the big city then. They all were farmers. They had a cow, which is why we have this good dairy culture from Eastern European Jews. And Muchana, I read somewhere, I don't know, maybe even on the internet, there's a Belarus restaurant in Sheepshead Bay, where, of course, there are many, many Russians, Ukrainians, Georgians, all kinds of former Soviets live in Sheepshead Bay these days. And there's a Belarus restaurant that features a dish called Muchana. Who knew? So we go to the restaurant and order Muchana, and it comes with potato pancakes. Now, my grandmother's Muchana was all about the gravy. It was all about something to serve with potato pancakes, and we had also applesauce. And that was the main event at my grandmother's Hanukkah party. And I have service for 24 of hers. So we were, if we sat at the table, it was 24 at a time. But if I remember, there was a lot of, you know, let the kids eat first, and then blah, 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 that.
I think it was shifts
at this table set for 24.
I think we grew up in the same household.
Except in Buffalo.
Except in Buffalo, because it was this. This is how it was.
Well, maybe your family is from a nearby shtetl, or
it's
even gotta
be.
Shtetl.
It's got to be the Minsky pin.
Could be.
Minsky.
You have Muchana?
That I don't remember. I just remember the feet and the chicken soup.
This was a vivid memory. Not only that, but I
remember the tables.
I reconstructed it to a degree, and I haven't made it in 20 years at least. Because I haven't finished my Muchana story though.
So get back to it.
Because I did. Used to reproduce my grandmother's Hanukkah menu and get all the first cousins from that side of the family. And then I discovered none of them wanted to eat this. So I got very discouraged and actually stopped having the party altogether. That's the whole side story why. It was more than they didn't want to eat Muchana. So I like them. In fact, I love most of them. But eating with them is an issue. So anyway, back to Muchana. So I go to the Belarus restaurant in Sheepshead Bay, where, what can I say, the Muchana is based on pork, hardly what my grandmother would make, even though we were not strictly kosher. But everything was kosher style, for sure. We would not eat pork. Not at that point in my grandmother's life. So, and it's in a creamy sauce. And so that has nothing to do with the Muchana of my youth, except that it is served with potato pancakes. Now I find out, doing some research on Belarus, that Muchana is sort of like the last vestige of old Belarus cooking. And the word means dunk. And that's why it's always served with potato pancakes. Or, in some Belarus families that are not Jewish and aren't celebrating Hanukkah, they serve it with other kinds of pancakes, like a blini-type pancake. But it's all about dunking into the gravy, and that's exactly what my grandmother's dish was about. So I'm going to make, I haven't made it, as I said, it's more than 20 years. But I did publish a recipe for it when I was at the Daily News, and I found it this morning. And it's super easy, but it's got to stay in the oven a long time. Now, I distinctly remember my grandmother putting this, let me just call up the document, putting this in the oven. I know that she baked it. She didn't do it on top of the stove. But I think you probably could do it on top of the stove, too. But you would really have to keep track of it because you want to cook it over very low heat. You know, when you cook meat, like, I'm going to say use chuck. My grandmother did not use chuck. I'm not certain what she used. The recipe that I published in the Daily News many thousands of years ago calls for brisket, but I bought some beautiful-looking chuck, and since I'm not kosher, I can use chuck. And about 3.5 pounds of, I bought these very thick, they call it chuck roast, it's good for pot roast, and that's sort of what this is, in fact, a kind of pot roast. And so it must be at least 2 inches thick, and I'm going to cut this into 2-inch on each side cubes, maybe bigger. I'll see as I cut. But you want about 3.5 pounds of meat. And you're going to brown it in a little bit of vegetable oil. You only need a tiny bit of vegetable oil to start it out because the meat, of course, will render some of its fat. Do it a little at a time, of course. You want the meat to get really brown because that's what's going to contribute to your gravy. And this is all about the gravy and not the meat. So after all the meat, and so remove the meat as it browns. And I do this in a big enameled cast iron Dutch oven. And after all the meat is browned, you take it out as it goes, you add your onions. And I would use I would use 2 medium onions. I cut them in half through the root end, slice them into half moons, throw them in the pot. And the onions themselves should help you deglaze the pan, meaning scrape the pan, the bottom of the pan. You now have brown stuff on the bottom of your pan from browning the meat. And when you add the onions, the moisture from the onions will help release all that flavor from the bottom of the pan. And now you put the meat back in the pan, probably have collected some juices on the platter you put it on, or bowl you put it in, add that. And then add water to barely cover the meat cubes. You don't want them, just barely cover. What can I say? You're going to have to season that with about a tablespoon of salt. It's quite a lot of meat here and gravy in the end. And a half a teaspoon of freshly ground black pepper. Now, I put in a small hot red pepper or a big pinch of hot red pepper flakes, but you can do this with just black pepper, too. My grandmother added the hot pepper because we like things a little spicier, but in fact, I doubt that her mother, who made this in Belarus, used hot pepper. Even black pepper was, a luxury. But it was a holiday. This Eastern European cooking basically is salt and pepper cooking with onions, you could say. So the whole cuisine is salt, pepper, and onions. Not a paprika. Those are the main seasonings. And I always used to say, if you want your food to taste like your grandmother's, or nowadays I would probably have to say great-grandmother's, you have to use ground white pepper in a tin stored next to the stove for at least a year.
At least. Better. 10 years is better. Same with
years is better.
Same
right.
with the paprika.
A particular taste, too.
Right.
So, anyway, you bring the whole deal to a simmer on top of the stove, cover it, and put it in a 275-degree oven. This is probably going to take 3 hours. You want the meat very tender, yet not falling apart. And then, once it is tender, let it cool. And in fact, if you can make this the day before you serve it, even better, much better. And you refrigerate it, and then you can skim off the fat before you continue. And there could be a lot of fat. If it's good meat, it's got a lot of fat. Don't trim up this meat so that every piece is 100% lean.
Hey, Arthur.
Now you need to taste the gravy. Salt and pepper it if you need to. Of course, bring it to a simmer on top of the stove. And you're going to thicken the gravy. Now, this, of course, is going to ruin the brown color of the gravy, but that's what it is. My grandmother would call this an einbrin, which is basically flour and water mixed together. In this case, about 2 tablespoons of flour and 1/4 cup of cold water. Use a fork and stir them together until they're smooth. And once your gravy in the pot is at a simmer, you can add this mixture, stir it into the whole dish. And if that's not thick enough for you, you can add more. But once you've added flour and water, I want you to simmer this for at least 10 minutes to get any raw flour taste out. And that's it. Now, like I said, you only have to serve a chunk or 2 or 3 of meat, depends on the size of the piece of meat, because this is all about gravy and potato pancakes. Now, that's the very traditional Eastern European way celebrate Passover. What am I saying? Passover. Hanukkah.
Hanukkah. But you know what?
Any fried food will do, though.
Well, so this is the comedy. I was speaking to someone who is not Jewish, and she didn't know what Hanukkah is. And so
didn't know what is?
She didn't really know what Hanukkah was.
Oh, Hanukkah, okay.
Okay, so the basics of Hanukkah, if you look it up on the web, it's the festival of lights.
Of lights, yeah.
And it's when Jewish people eat fried food. I understand, but it's if you don't know, then it's just a really interesting take on it. It's like, wow, Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Well, you can have fried chicken. That's okay.
You can have totally fried anything, but that's not fried anything.
It's all about the oil.
Yes, exactly.
Because this is the miracle of Hanukkah, is that the temple, which was desecrated. I'm not going to go into the whole war, had to be whatever you call it. And when they discovered there was only enough, you know, even Catholic churches have an eternal light over the altar.
As right.
Do synagogues, that's the thing we have.
No, there's so much in common.
That light is supposed to always be lit. And what they discovered was that there was only enough oil to keep the light lit one more day, but it lasted a whole week until they could get more sanctified oil. So I want to point out that this is during the olive oil harvest. This is not a joke. This is the truth. And, you know, this is the time you were getting new oil, and I'm not sure what it had to go through to be sanctified, to be holy enough to put in that lamp. But the miracle is that one day's oil lasted for 8 days. So we light a candle every night for 8 days. There are 9 candles on a Hanukkah menorah, not on a normal menorah that you see, you know, that is a symbol of Judaism. But the Hanukkah menorah, or Hanukkiah, has a shamus, has a leader of the pack.
And the shamus.
And often on a menorah, it's either the tallest a candle, or one in my childhood menorah, which I still have, it's a middle candle that stands up higher than the other. And that's the one you light with a match or however you're lighting it. And it lights the other ones, starting from right to left. Last night was the first night. Tonight is the second night.
So tonight there will be, you'll have your shamus, you'll use your shamus to light two candles.
The shamus will be lit and the first two candles from the right.
Right. Correct. And it's
the literally largest. I laughed because I looked at the sign last night, and it's now called the largest menorah in Brooklyn. Is on my corner.
Yeah.
At the entrance to Prospect Park, where there was dancing in the streets last night. And but they used to, I could have sworn it used to say the largest menorah in the world. Somebody must have contested that. And now we're down to the largest menorah in Brooklyn.
Well,
although, you know, given
it might not even be the largest menorah, right?
Religious Jewish population here, that's saying something.
Yeah.
So latkes.
Latkes.
You know, the whole point of latkes is to fry. But not every culture does potato pancakes. In the Eastern European Jews, like myself, by the way, my Ancestry.com result came up that I'm 94% Eastern European Jew, so no surprise there.
I was going to say, there's a shock.
I'm 2% South Asian, so some Indian or Paki got in there somehow.
Yeah, well, probably as part of the Cossack rape.
Oh, part of the Cossack wave?
I said Cossack rape, but that's okay.
Oh, Cossack rape. Who knows?
I mean, it would...
Could be willing, you know.
See.
I prefer to think of it as willing.
I look at it this way. Whenever I think of Cossacks, I think of Cossack horsemen.
Well, that's goes
so
with
that's,
it.
That's where you come from.
Right. Well,
Should I offer this? Oh, I did offer the recipe from Machana, but I want to add something about our... I'm not going to do... potato pancakes, truthfully, I do exactly the same formula that I use for potato pudding, except a little more matzo meal, and that's to say, for 3 pounds of potatoes, and I use russet, or you can even buy the expensive big baking, you know, Idaho baking potatoes. I buy the big ones because it's less peeling. So, so for three pounds, you want one big onion. And I grate up my onion first in the food processor until it's practically a puree, put it in the bowl, and then start my potatoes, doing them in batches so that I can squeeze out between, in the same food processor. And the pieces should be like the, no bigger than a rice kernel. And so you pulse on and off until it's done. And then I squeeze out moisture by putting the potatoes in a strainer over a bowl, use the back of a spatula, and do that. And if you mix your potatoes in with the onions as you go, and plus I use a big silver-plated spoon, the same spoon my grandmother used, because a tarnished silver spoon has tartrates on the on them, and that helps keep the potatoes white. So, or at the worst, they turn pink. So you put them in a bowl, and you stir in the potatoes as you go, and then I add just enough matzo meal, not flour. I don't like flour for some reason. It gives them a bushier texture. But I like them in the end to be lacy and crisp at the edge, thin pancakes. And I'll warn you, the first couple of ones are not going to come out great. You probably don't need all that potato and onion. You probably don't need more than a half a cup, three-quarters of a cup of matzo meal, but do a little at a time. And the oil should be, it should start cooking as soon as it hits the oil, however, not too hot. So I use the end of a wooden spoon, meaning the handle end of a wooden spoon, and I dip it into the oil, and when bubbles form around the spoon handle, instantly I know the oil is done. By the way, we always used to make the pancakes as we ate them. I was early in my youth. I was early when I was a kid. Let's say not youth, but when I was a kid, I was not on latke patrol. But as I got older, my grandmother trusted me to stand and fry,
right,
not to mix up the matke. Mixed batter, so to speak, myself.
But to
I definitely was grating from a young age.
I got to grate, and then I got.
And those, yeah,
I graduated to
bloody
like,
knuckles from the,
exactly from the stupid. Yeah.
But you know, my grandmother was young enough and lived long enough to have a food processor and figure out how to do that in the food processor. It did not. It never worked very well in the blender. So I remember trying it in a blender, and then giving up on the blender and going back to knuckle bleeds. But, you know, in her later day, we had the first Cuisinart. So
I remember those old moulis. I remember those old moulis, the old moulis that would, like, the blades were so sharp that just setting them up on the side of the counter, the meat grinder, you know. And the mandolins.
No, I actually have one of those.
Right, and that you know, they were so diabolical that.
Yeah, it is. I do use a miniature version of that for grating nuts, I like the fluffiness that it. It's actually a grater. It's a rotary grater, and I will confess, my favorite one. I don't know if it's still out there. Came under Martha Stewart's name. And the reason I like it so much is that it has a sealed barrel. My other ones, even the ones I bought, you know, within my lifetime, I have a little mooly one, aren't sealed at the end. So nuts escape in the wrong way.
this is like the reality of actually cooking something, you know.
Well, you know,
things,
I
all
actually,
sorts of things
yeah,
escape the wrong way.
People are surprised that I actually cook. I cooked two meals yesterday. But one was super easy because it was leftover chicken. But I did make a big pot of broccoli, dress it. For lunch, we had chicken tetrazzini with the other half of the chicken that we didn't eat for dinner last night. And the reason I made chicken tetrazzini...
Because your turkey was terrible.
I didn't like my turkey, one. And then I waited too long to... I was going to still use it for a tetrazzini. I didn't want to waste it. But in the end, I had to throw it away. But I was so into making tetrazzini that I bought an already roasted rotisserie chicken. That worked out great. The breasts went into the tetrazzini, and we ate the leg thighs for dinner. And so one chicken, for two meals for two men who eat a lot. We should not have eaten the whole tetrazzini. It was for four people.
I can't believe I ate
it. But it only had 8 ounces of pasta.
So enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah, so enjoy. That wasn't so bad. Yeah. 4 ounces each. It was a generous portion, but of course it had cream sauce too. But we're not talking calories.
No.
Oh, yeah.
And that's it. So today is Muchana Day, and I will refrigerate my... I'll tell you how it turned out next week. Uh-huh. As I said, I haven't made this in so many years, but I'm driven to do this because of my discovery that it means dunk. and that we're from dog shits.
That's all you need to know.
Let's leave it right there.
There's my celebration.
All right.
All right, kids. Have a great week. Happy Hanukkah. Yeah.
All right. Take care, Arthur. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven here on Robin Hood Radio. And you can hear him, of course, on demand 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven from Hathaway Young, located on South Center Street in Millerton. Flawless catering and event planning, hathawayyoung.com. John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467. On the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. In Hillsdale, New York, Hillsdale Home Chef with two beautiful teaching classes, and they've got classes to go in those cooking rooms. More information, 518-325-7000, hghshomechef.com. And Haven Cafe in Lenox, Massachusetts, offering quality food and excellent service. From a fresh cup of great coffee to healthy, delicious breakfast, or sit down with a dinner with a tasty, life-enhancing meal that you can take home. Also, they feature catering. Supporting local organic farmers, environmentally conscious, and epicurious distributors, havencafebakery.com.